This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
How lucky can one guy be? I kissed her and she kissed me. Like the fella once said, ain't that a kick in the head? The room was completely black. I hugged her and she hugged back. Like the sailor said, quote, ain't that a hole in the boat? My head keeps spinning. I go to sleep and keep grinning. If this is just a beginning, my life is gonna be beautiful. I've
sunshine. Oh yeah, there he is, Dino. Remember Dino? Dean Martin, remember all those years, you older folks, that he was with Jerry Lewis, making all those movies, and then he went solo. And then he kind of joined the Rat Pack with Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis, and the other guys. Mr. Relaxed, that was him. Good morning, welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. We are Tampa Bay's very relaxed libertarian radio show. I am Paul Molloy. I'm so relaxed, I'm laying on the ground. And along with Big Ed Davis, thank you for joining us on this Monday morning, December the 4th. By the way, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Join us and tell your friends. The more the merrier. In a few minutes, Trey Kovacs of the Competitive Enterprise Institute is going to be here, and we're going to talk about a landmark Supreme Court case that covers whether or not public sector employees must pay union dues, even if they're not in the union. Indeed, very interesting. Can't wait to talk with Trey. And is the special prosecutor's office tainted in the Trump-Russian collusion investigation? Well, maybe so. And we're going to take a look at it. And is a war with North Korea now likely? Well, there is a senator who seems to think so. So we're gonna talk about him, tell you more about it. Stay tuned. And who are America's oldest living singing stars? Speaking of Dean Martin, right? How old would Dean Martin be right now if he were still around, I wonder? Probably close to or over 100 years old. Anyway, who are the oldest living singing stars? We have them for you. If you'll hang on later in our Ultimate Top 10. Don't forget, good old Tan Talk Radio, 106.1 FM. We sound so good. And, of course, 1340 AM. You can also, if you're around Dade City, 104.3. Oh, yeah. And please visit our website, OurFreedomWorks.com, OurFreedomWorks.com. You can listen to us anytime if you're on that website. Anytime, because Big Ed sets up all our shows on there. You can listen at your leisure. And when we're doing it live, you can listen from there as well, OurFreedomWorks.com. Okay, lots to talk about. And last week, as you may or may not know, the guy that killed, the illegal immigrant that killed Kate Steinle in San Francisco was found not guilty. And there has been a hue and a cry about that. And a Republican congressman now is planning to introduce a bill today that would threaten huge fines and prison time for elected officials that shelter illegal immigrants that are criminals, like this guy that killed Kate Steinle. His name is Todd Rokita, and he is from Indiana. This would really put the fear of God into these legislators. It's aimed at sanctuary city policies. You know, these sanctuary cities are not reporting illegal immigrants when they commit a crime there, as they are supposed to, according to federal law. So here's what Rokita said yesterday. He was on, I think, the Fox News Sunday show. Politicians don't get to pick and choose what laws they can, what laws to comply with. He said Americans are dying because politicians sworn to uphold the law refuse to do so. You know, there's a very good argument to be made for upholding that law. And here it is. If you don't uphold that law, what other laws should not be upheld, right? Should we just stop paying income taxes? Hey, the cities aren't upholding the immigration laws. Why should I pay income taxes? So, you know, there's a lot of good reasons why you got to follow the rules, my friends. Now, this bill, stopping lawless actions of politicians. Listen to this. You know, they always do it so that you can use an acronym, right? So it's going to be called SLAP, the SLAP Act. The SLAP Act. How do you like that one? The SLAP Act. Sounds like the Three Stooges. The SLAP Act would hold state and local lawmakers criminally responsible for not complying with immigration laws, federal laws. The bill would subject violators to a $1 million fine and up to 5 years in the hoosegow. Well, what did you expect after that verdict? Is that sort of like the O.J. Simpson verdict? You know, it seems so clear that he killed those two people, right? And then they come back with a verdict in about, what, 10 minutes? 10 minutes or so? Do you remember that? I couldn't believe it. So I wonder about this Kate Steinle verdict, how that all worked out. Very, very, very interesting. But there's been such a blowback on it, and who knows? Anyway, let us take our break, and when we come back, I cannot wait to talk with Trey Kovacs.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi there, I'm Dr. John.
And I'm Dr. Lisa.
You have medical questions you never get to ask?
Now you can ask us.
After many years of caring for children and families, we've learned that the best informed families are also the healthiest.
Are you saying knowledge is power, Dr. John?
I am, Dr. Lisa, and since you're the smart one, I hope you'll share some knowledge with me and our listeners.
Let's do this then.
Okay, we hope you'll join us every Monday at noon right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for the Drs. John and Lisa Show.
Listen online at tantalk1340.com.
Hi, this is Tim Del Toro.
And I'm Lou Angel Wolf, and we are the Grease Gurus.
Our show is broadcast every Saturday morning live at WTAN, Tantalk Radio, 1340.
That's 10 o'clock every Saturday morning for an automotive forum that is flavored with humor and insight.
We encourage you to call in and be part of the Grease Gurus show.
We'd love to have you, and we will certainly help you find your inner grease.
This show is sponsored by Tim's Performance Service Center in beautiful Tarpon Springs at 906 Verona Place, and you can reach us personally at 727-543-1601.
Aha.
Hello, this is Pryor Smith speaking from Toronto. Again this winter, some 4 million Canadians are spending vacation time in Florida. And each day, they're continuing a 63-year tradition, tuning in Canada Calling on radio. They're up-to-the-minute news from home at 9 a.m. and 12 noon here on the Tantalk Radio Network. Join us on WTAN AM 1340 and FM 106.1, WDCF AM 1350, and WZHR AM 1400 and FM 104.3.
Tom O'Brien is on the Tantalk Radio Network. Every Monday through Friday from 4 till 5 p.m., Tom takes to the airwaves as he breaks down the day's market action. Tom combines his technical knowledge of the markets with his years of trading experience to take your calls and questions every market day from 4 to 5 p.m. Whether you're new to trading or an active day trader, don't miss out on the Tom O'Brien Show live on the Tantalk Radio Network from 4 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on a Monday and delighted to have back one of our buddies, Trey Kovacs of the Great Competitive Enterprise Institute. He joins us to talk about something that CEI is involved in. I believe they filed in what they call a friend of the court or an amicus briefing on it. And it is involving a case coming before the Supreme Court forcing non-union public sector employees to pay union dues. Trey, welcome back to Freedom Works.
Oh, well, thanks so much for having me.
You know, it seems incredulous to me that somebody that does not want to work for a union has to still pay dues. Why has that been the case for public sector employees?
So in 1977, the Supreme Court in Abood versus the Detroit Board of Education approved government forcing employees to pay a union to bargain on their behalf. And basically, this decision was misguided because they basically said, since public sector unions and private sector unions shared similarities and forced union dues are allowed in the private sector, then it's okay in the public sector. But why this decision is so misguided is because government sector unions are inherently political. There's no difference between collective bargaining with the government and lobbying. So hopefully, in this case, in Janus versus AFSCME, they'll reverse that decision.
So the Supreme Court now has this on the docket. Is that correct? And tell us how CEI is involved in it.
Yeah, like you said, we filed an amicus brief in the case, we're filing another one on the merits this week. I think it will be filed on Wednesday. And so what our argument says is basically when they ruled in Abood that unions are allowed to collect fees from non-members, they said, okay, you can only collect these dues for collective bargaining purposes, but not for any political or ideological purposes. But what we found is that despite these restrictions that were placed on unions, they still spend these forced union dues on politics. For instance, most unions hold conventions, you know, annually a couple times a year, and they charge all non-members for those conventions. But all those conventions are you know, basically big political conventions. AFSCME, the defendant in this case, at their convention, they had Hillary Clinton speak. They had a vote for Hillary session. They vote on resolutions on all sorts of political things, on D.C. statehood, marijuana legalization, even the metric system. So basically, all these non-members are forced to pay for all of these political actions at these conventions.
You know, even if that was not an issue, it seems strange to me that you could force a public sector employee to pay union dues. I mean, let me ask you this. Are all government employees, you know, like in Washington, are every one of the government employees in the union, or are there some of them that actually are paying the dues but are not in the union?
Are you talking about at the federal level or the state level?
At the federal level. I'm just curious.
Yes. So at the federal level, they enjoy right to work status. So no federal employee is forced to pay dues to a union that they don't belong to.
Really?
So that's in the federal statute. So yeah, this is only concerning state and local.
State and local.
Employees.
Okay.
So really, it'd just be harmonizing with the federal government.
Gotcha. So in most states, then, public sector employees, does that include, like, the teachers' unions and things like that?
Yeah, bus drivers, all those.
Okay. And there are a lot of them that do not want to be in the union, but they have to pay these dues. Now, there is a similarity between forcing them to pay these dues and some of these home health care workers and the like that also had an issue similar to this. Is that right?
That is correct. And the brief filed by the National Right to Work Committee that's representing Mark Janus, who's bringing the case to the Supreme Court, heavily cites the decision in Harris v. Quinn that basically said that forced union dues is forced speech and it's unconstitutional. So they were relying on that decision to essentially free the approximately 5 million public employees, like teachers, from forced union dues.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so this is kind of a First Amendment thing. I don't want to join the union, and yet you're making me pay dues, and I know that these dues are going towards a speech for one side or the other that I may not agree with. Is that kind of the gist of the argument?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a bedrock principle, you know, in the United States that no person can be compelled to subsidize speech of a party they don't wish to.
Gotcha.
I mean, this is really a cut and dry case, and it's really astonishing that this has been allowed to go on so long.
We're talking with Trey Kovacs. He is a labor policy expert at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and he has penned a piece about this amicus brief that the Competitive Enterprise Institute is filing in regards to a case enforced union dues. So what are the chances, Trey? Do you, first of all, the Supreme Court's got it on its docket. Do we have any idea when they may hear this?
So oral argument is hasn't been set yet, but it's likely to be in late February, and then a ruling in the summer.
In the summer, okay. And you're a gambling man, are you not? What do you think? Are they going to... I mean, we have a conservative court now. I would tend to think the conservatives would all vote in a block, but you tell me, what do you think?
Well, I think everyone who's a critic of forced union dues has high hopes for this case. Essentially, this case is revisiting a decision, Friedrichs versus the California Teachers Association, that was split 4-4 a couple of years ago. And so the decision was made right after the untimely death of Anton Scalia. So everyone's hoping that Gorsuch basically will vote as Scalia would, and it should be a win.
Yeah. Gorsuch, of course, being the latest addition to the Supreme Court. Now, Justice Alito pointed out that in an earlier case that it's almost impossible to draw any kind of a line between the government union politics and its regular activities. It's almost impossible to do it. I mean, that would make sense. It would seem to me that if that is the argument, and indeed if an employee's money should not clearly go to political activities, it would seem to me it's almost a slam dunk.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the public sector, both collective bargaining and political advocacy are directed at the government. And bargaining subjects like wages, pensions, benefits are political issues. And even furthermore, I believe in the Rights Work Foundation brief, state and local public employee wages make up around half of all state and local budgets. And so if you're bargaining over essentially something that takes up half of all state and local budgets, that's a huge political issue of how they're going to spend tax dollars. And that shouldn't be something that you're forcing public employees to pay for.
Yeah, yeah. Are there any other particular cases that are going to come before the Supreme Court now that CEI is interested in, you know, involving businesses and economics and the like? Are there any other ones that you're kind of, you yourself, Trey, are keeping your eye on?
Well, one that is before the D.C. Circuit is a case involving the joint employer issue that we've talked about,
right,
that greatly expanded liability to companies that contract with smaller ones. So we've been waiting for a decision on that for probably 9 months or so.
Mm-hmm.
After oral arguments, and so that one very likely could make it to the Supreme Court, just because whoever loses, you know, is certainly going to appeal. Now, if the Supreme Court takes the case or not, who knows? But that's something to also look out for.
I wonder why it's taken so long. You said 9 months. Why so long, do you think?
Well, I think potentially the National Labor Relations Board, with the change in president, is now filled with conservatives, and they could overturn that precedent on their own. So maybe the courts are waiting for them to kind of fix this and say, okay, you know, your case isn't valid anymore because they overturned the precedent. Mm-hmm.
This is not exactly on subject, but I'm interested. CEI, of course, probably is applauding the tax reform bill that passed in the Senate this past week. Or what's going on there in terms of allegiance to it?
We actually don't do tax policy.
No, you don't.
So we don't have I don't think we've taken a position on it.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Although I can say that it will reduce my tax burden.
Well, that's it. Hey, what else is there to know? I mean, yeah, you know, it's funny. Maybe you don't want to comment on it, but I cannot believe that anybody would buy into the idea that if you reduce rates of income tax, that somehow you're going to pay more. And yet it seems like there are people that are saying, oh, this is terrible for the middle class. And I'm going, what? You know, I cannot see how that would work. But somehow, you know, they've made this thing something that, you know, to want to reduce taxes is a mortal sin, you know. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I won't comment on it much. But yeah, certainly myself and my wife are squarely in the middle class. And we like taking home more of our pay.
Exactly.
So...
What other issues, we have a couple minutes here, what other issues is the Competitive Enterprise Institute been following most recently that we can, you know, just touch on?
Yeah. So a really big issue for us is the Department of Labor is going to issue a new overtime rule. So the Obama overtime rule that would have doubled the overtime salary threshold for who's eligible was ruled invalid by the courts. And so kind of now to clear up things, the Department of Labor is going to issue a new rule. And so we've issued comments on that, and hopefully they come to a more reasonable solution and raise the salary threshold more in line with historical increases that are normally very low.
Yeah, is that in any way with these people like our managers, you know, and because they don't technically have an hourly wage, you know, and yet they put in overtime, that kind of thing where, you know, our business is taking advantage of those people by saying they're not hourly workers. Is that what that's involved in?
Yeah. So, it's about basically people who are earning a salary. What level should that be? How low should that salary be when you are eligible to earn overtime?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Congress intended when they enacted the Fair Labor Standards Act to not impact every single worker under the sun, and they have many exemptions. And one is for individuals that basically have professional jobs. So they view if you have a professional job, the government shouldn't be interfering between your wage and ours. And so really, if you're, you know, an assistant manager and you're making, you know, in the high $30,000, you know, you might want to work extra hours to show you have worth, to learn,
right,
you know, and are ambitious. And with an overtime rule, basically it's putting a roadblock up to ambitious employees who might want to work extra hours to move up another rung on, you know, the hierarchy at their company.
Yeah.
So I think it's one of those things that, you know, certainly, you know, oh, everyone gets a raise, you know, it's overtime. Sounds really good, but that's not really how it happens, because unlike the minimum wage, overtime, there's many ways for employees essentially to keep labor costs the same. It's not like minimum wage where it's an automatic increase to those, you know, few people who actually earn a minimum wage.
You know, it's always boggled my mind that the federal government is even allowed to poke its nose into a business and tell a business how you can pay your employee. I mean, the common sense thing is you let the employee and the employer work out an agreement between themselves. Then they're both happy. But then, when you got the third party telling people, no, you can't do that, yes, what's going on here? You know, we've really, I mean, just if you think about it, it does not make any sense, and it only bungles up the whole relationship.
Well, absolutely. And what you're going to see, or what you've seen over the past decades, is lots of employees and companies have come to the agreement that people want flexible schedules. They want to be able to work from home. They want to be able to take time off if you need to go out for an hour to pick up a kid from school. They've agreed to let that happen. And then if you make all of those types of employees eligible for overtime, where these employers have to track their hours, and if they don't correctly track their hours, they're going to get sued. You know, they're going to basically something, you know, that organically employees and companies have agreed to, flexible schedules, are going to start going away.
Yeah. Well, Trey Kovacs, thank you so much for being with us. We'll keep an eye on this forced union dues case and look forward to talking with you again soon.
Great. Well, thanks so much for having me.
Our pleasure. Trey Kovacs. Okay. We're going to take our break. And when we come back, is the special prosecutor's office tainted in the Trump-Russian collusion investigation? We are going to talk about it.
Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, you.
Who, me?
Not you, the hot one.
Hi, what can I do for you?
Aren't you that lady that's on that radio show called The Ameritech Connection?
Why, yes, I am. We're live every Thursday at 5 p.m. on Tantalk Radio Network. Right, Mike?
That's right, Sharon. Live in a condo or homeowners association? Do you have issues? How about questions? We cover it all and more. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m.
What time again?
That's 5 p.m. every Thursday on Tantalk Radio Network, 1340 a.m. and 106.1 FM.
Hi there, I'm Dr. John.
And I'm Dr. Lisa.
Do you have medical questions you never get to ask?
Now you can ask us.
After many years of caring for children and families, we've learned that the best informed families are also the healthiest.
Are you saying knowledge is power, Dr. John?
I am, Dr. Lisa, and since you're the smart one, I hope you'll share some knowledge with me and our listeners.
Let's do this then.
Okay, we hope you'll join us every Monday at noon right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for the Doctors John and Lisa Show.
Listen online at tantalk1340.com.
Let's go bowling!
Let's go bowling, heard on the Tantalk Radio Network every Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 12 Eastern Time, sponsored by 12 Strike and Innovative Ball Spinner. If you bowl, if you haven't bowled in a while, or if you never bowled, why not you be one of 65 million people have bowled last year? Listen to the tip of the week, bowling stars, old and new. Let's go bowling show, gobowlingshow.com.
Hello out there. Tune in every Saturday at noon on Tan Talk for Connecting Caregivers with me, Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregivers. Every Saturday at noon, we will find resources, education, and a shoulder for the caregivers. I know it's tough, but we can work it out together. Look forward to you tuning in on Saturdays at noon, where you'll have tons of information. Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregivers.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back. I hope the weather's as nice wherever you are as it is here. It's a beautiful day here. Really nice. Thank goodness. Well, Donald Trump is calling out James Comey. You know, Donald is, I guess the tweets kind of unfilter Donald, right? Unshackle him. And he's calling out Comey for running the FBI with supposed political motives. And he says in his tweet, he promises to bring the FBI, quote, back to greatness, unquote. So that's got to really infuriate people like James Comey and former Attorney General Eric Holder. And it has. Both of them are very upset and have responded in kind. But here's what Trump said. Quote, after years of Comey with the phony and dishonest Clinton investigation and more, running the FBI, its reputation is in tatters. He says, worst in history. But fear not, we will bring it back to greatness, unquote. It's sort of like he's Robin Hood, you know? So here's the deal. Apparently, as if we should be shocked, one of the attorneys involved with Robert Mueller in this special investigation of Trump and Russian collusion is an avowed hater of Donald Trump, and he's been fired. Two senior Justice Department officials have confirmed that the Office of Inspector General is investigating and reviewing the role played by a guy by the name of Peter Strzok, I guess, or Strzok, or it's Strzok, a former deputy director for counterintelligence, who was removed from the investigation into the Trump-Russian collusion by Mueller earlier this year. Of course, they didn't tell anybody that they had done so. But this guy was exchanging all kinds of anti-Trump stuff. And apparently his wife was a big Hillary Clinton supporter, an active Hillary Clinton supporter. Why are we not surprised? Didn't we talk about the fact that Mueller was hiring all these attorneys and they were like contributors to Hillary Clinton? Why are we not surprised? It's not like he loaded up with pro-Trump attorneys, right? Come on. This guy was out to get Trump. They're still out to get him. There's no Russian collusion, of course. Trump didn't. How could Trump have been running for president and then secretly meeting with Putin or somebody in Russia? I mean, come on. It just made no sense whatsoever, but they're determined to do this witch hunt on him. Anyway, apparently the inspector general, now this is, again, in the Department of Justice, will examine this guy Stroke's role. He was also involved in the Hillary email investigation, you know, or non-investigation by the FBI. So they're going to examine this guy and see what's going on. Now, Stroke participated in the FBI's interview, or you could call it a non-interview, of Hillary Clinton. You remember, we talked about why didn't they record the interview? The FBI was interviewing Hillary Clinton. They didn't write any notes. They didn't take any notes, and they didn't record the interview. Can you believe that when they were doing an investigation into the email scandal? I mean, that is just, talk about a whitewash. So, finally, we're looking into this a little bit, and it's because of this guy. Stroke participated in the FBI's fateful interview with Clinton. That was back in 2016. Just days before Comey said he declined to recommend any prosecution. You know? I don't even think Comey was involved in the interview. Did you know that? He was not involved in the interview with Hillary either. It's good that they will look back on this at this point. As deputy FBI director at the time for counterintelligence, Strzok also enjoyed a liaison with various agencies in the intelligence community, including the CIA. House investigators say they have long regarded Strzok as a key figure in the chain of events when the Bureau in 2016 got the famous anti-Trump dossier. And after they got it, they launched an investigation into Russian meddling. Turned out the dossier was filled with garbage, wasn't it? On Donald Trump? Made-up stuff? The dossier was a compendium of salacious and largely unverified allegations about Trump and others around him, compiled by the opposition research firm Fusion GPS. I love that name, Fusion GPS. So this is getting so, everybody that's watching this must be saying to themselves, there's nothing there. Trump didn't collude with anybody. What's going on? I mean, the most they can do is so far is to find his former national security guy, Michael Flynn, guilty of lying to the FBI when he said he didn't talk with a Russian ambassador after Trump was elected before he took office, as if he couldn't do that. He could. He's more than allowed. In fact, it's encouraged. These transition periods, your guys are talking to people from other countries. Believe it or not, they talk to people from other countries. And when they talk to people from other countries, they will say, look, this is what we think and this is what we're, you know, they'll kind of give them the state of the state at that point. So Michael Flynn had every right to talk to these people, but when he was asked by the FBI For some reason, he said, no, I never talked to him. And that's what they got him on. Now, they don't want him. They want to get after Trump. They're going to use him. So they dangle this deal. You know, you say guilty to this. We'll forget every other bad thing you ever did, which we are now holding over you. But you sing like a canary. Well, do you think Flynn is going to take that deal and then say after that, no, I got nothing else to say? Of course not. So this is, but there won't be any Russian collusion. None. Now, guess who says that a preemptive war with North Korea is very likely at this point? It's Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham, the Republican from South Carolina. He said yesterday on one of those talk shows that war is becoming more likely as North Korea continues to develop its missile technology. Lindsey Graham warned that North Korea is now getting closer to striking the U.S. He says, we are running out of time. By the way, he was on Face the Nation. So what would you do? I mean, apparently the missile that they shot up there kind of got out of the atmosphere and then kind of went crazy. So they haven't got it quite figured out apparently yet. By the way, did you know that there were some people on a commercial airplane flying, I don't know where they were exactly, but they saw the missile launch? They saw the missile coming up? Must be through the clouds at that point, in a little bit of a distance from them. I wonder what they thought when they saw that. You're looking out your window and you see this missile going straight up in the air. What if it hit the plane? But so they haven't, North Korea apparently is not quite there, but distance-wise they are. They just don't know where it's going to go and whether it will detonate. So, you know, what do you do with this guy over there? I think you should, you know, you talk like crazy with China. And you say, look, you got to go over there and take him out. Get rid of that guy. Come on. What you doing? Put somebody in there that's rational. Or somebody's got to, you know, surreptitiously get in there. And much like we got Osama bin Laden, right? We were able to get Osama bin Laden. You would think that all those North Koreans around Kim Jong-un would not only, you could get around them, they'd help you. Do you think any of them really like him? They would probably be the first one to help you get rid of him. Couldn't you pay them off? Are we trying to pay them off? Maybe we should. But apparently we've got to do something with this guy. And then you hear all of these people talking about, is Trump rational enough? Well, look at what he has done so far. He's done a lot of good things, despite what you might read in the press. They finally got the tax bill done. He surrounds himself with really good people. And now they're talking about Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, whether or not he will stay. And, you know, the media is always thinking, let's make sure we've got some sort of a bad relationship going on. As if in previous administrations you didn't have dust-ups behind closed doors between different secretaries and the president. Of course you did. You know, we all do when you're talking any kind of policy, you're going to have back and forth on it. So the question is, will Tillerson be around next year as Secretary of State? Will he be fired or will he quit, right? From what I'm reading, he's going to be around. And that's next month, right? January? So I don't know. I think we got to cut Donald Trump a little bit of slack. I mean, the tax bill got passed. He got Gorsuch in. Look at the stock market. I don't know what it is this morning. I haven't seen it. But it's probably It's been breaking a record almost every day. That means there's a lot more money in people's pockets. And, you know, the stock market is not the big bad boogeyman. It's the place where a lot of people have invested their money, mom and pop, and typical people, and are hoping that they get a nice return so they can continue to live okay. That's what the stock market is really all about. It's about Americans and their opportunity to kind of enjoy the positive accomplishments of business. Okay, we are going to take our final break. When we come back, among other things, we're going to tell you who are the longest living American singing stars.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Show me the money.
It's the Employment Opportunity Hour with Gene Hodge every Thursday night from 7 until 8.
So the purpose of the show is to help you out there to find something that you enjoy doing instead of a job. And at the start of the show, I normally give out a formula, which I know will guarantee you to find the type of job that you want right now.
Find out the formula to an enjoyable job with Gene Hodge's Employment Opportunity Hour every Thursday night from 7 until 8 here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Show me the money.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food and Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com. My bridge is all...
Tom O'Brien is on the Tantalk Radio Network. Every Monday through Friday from 4 till 5 p.m., Tom takes to the airwaves as he breaks down the day's market action. Tom combines his technical knowledge of the markets with his years of trading experience to take your calls and questions every market day from 4 to 5 p.m. Whether you're new to trading or an active day trader, don't miss out on the Tom O'Brien Show live on the Tantalk Radio Network from 4 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on Freedom Works on a Monday morning, and we thank you so very much for being with us. Our buddy Bernie Sanders in the news. He wants Donald Trump to honor the no entitlement cuts philosophy. Vermont Senator Sanders calling on Trump yesterday to follow his campaign pledge not to cut Social Security, Medicaid, or Medicare. Now, Republicans hoping to cut entitlements after passing tax reform. Here's Marco Rubio. Many argue you can't cut taxes because it'll drive up the debt. But we have to do two things. We have to generate economic growth, which generates revenue, while reducing spending. That'll mean institutional structural changes to Social Security and Medicare for the future. Now, Sanders was at a rally in Pennsylvania yesterday. He said that Trump should tell Paul Ryan, tell Mitch McConnell that you will veto any bill that cuts Social Security, that cuts Medicare, that cuts Medicaid. I can just see him saying that and pointing up in the air. Do you ever notice when he's talking? It's like he's picking something. I want one of those. I want one of those. And I want one of, you know, with his hands. So then he sent out a press release noting remarks made by Trump back in 2016 about entitlements. And here's what Trump said on a Wisconsin radio station at the time. You know, Paul Ryan wants to knock out Social Security, knock it down, way down. He wants to knock Medicare way down. He said, I'm not going to cut it. I'm not going to raise ages, as in raising the age that you can get Social Security and Medicare. And I'm not going to do all the things that they want to do. But they want to really cut it and they want to cut it very substantially, the Republicans, and I'm not going to do that. So he did indeed say that. And I don't blame Sanders for saying that. But you know, the truth is that we're getting swallowed up by all of our entitlement spending and welfare spending. That's the truth. No question about it. And I don't know what, you know, and Bernie Sanders, as far as he's concerned, 100% of all the money they could ever get into the federal government could go to entitlements and welfare, because that's socialism for you. Okay, before we get to our top 10, we got a good one, by the way. I want to see if you know who the oldest living singer is. That would be it. Isn't that interesting? We're going to talk a little bit of sports, and I'm going to throw a curve at you at a little bit. Did you notice that they have now announced the four teams that are going to play in the college football championship?
Yeah, I did.
What do you think? And I think it's Alabama, Clemson. I don't have them in front of me.
Is it Auburn?
Not Auburn. Do you think that the way they selected is fair?
Well, there's arguments for everything. I mean, Miami would have been a shoo-in if they had not been beaten.
Yeah. Miami soundly dropped out, so yeah, they won't be one of them, right? Anyway, I think it's Oklahoma, Georgia, Alabama, and one other team. I know that. In fact, that's one other team. But it will be interesting. Now, on to the NFL. First of all, I noticed again, I was watching some of these games, and there are empty seats.
Yeah, there are.
There's still an effect of the kneeling. You know, I think a lot of fans just are upset
about
it.
You used to notice that because they used to have that blackout rule if it wasn't sold out.
That's true. They're
claiming it's sold out.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to take the hit.
I'm sure that's not the only factor, by the way. It's not. There's other things, too.
I think it's a big factor. It's a big factor.
Okay. Now, the Bucs went to Green Bay, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a great time to play a game in Green Bay in December. That's football weather. They lost, though, in overtime. Did you watch the game? Did you think Jameis Winston did a good job? And is Dirk Koetter their coach? Based on all of this, is he going to be back for next year?
Unfortunately, I did watch the game. And
it was exciting, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, to a point. But you got to remember, Green Bay has really been hit by injuries. You know, Aaron Rodgers wasn't starting at quarterback, and makes a big difference. You know, they did hang in there. But I think that, I had some friends that actually went to the game up there.
Really?
It was in the mid-30s in the morning, and it got up to about 50, so it was really nice.
It was a nice sunny day
there. Yeah, and
I noticed one thing, that they were slipping on the turf. Did you notice that?
Yeah, because I think it was whether it was humid or what the deal was, but the grass was slippery.
Maybe the temperature, because, you know, it's been cold, and then all of a sudden it warms up. You get a little bit of moisture.
Right.
So they were slipping around.
Some friends just sent me a photo of their final dinner in Milwaukee, and I said, was Dirk Koetter there at his final dinner, too? the head coach.
Okay, do you think he's going to go?
Yeah, I'm not even sure they're going to win five games. I don't know. They got a tough schedule the remainder of the year.
But, you know, it's surprising. You never know what they'll do, right?
You know, I think they're just playing out the string. If they don't win more than six games, there has to be a change. Everybody keeps saying, well, we keep changing coaches every 2 years. But you know what? The ones that we hired and fired, they haven't gotten work anywhere else. They've not been a head coach anywhere else. Shiano, Raheem Morris.
Isn't Lovey a head coach down in
college?
Texas?
In college, he is. Well, that's college.
Okay.
It's a big difference.
I see.
You know, they haven't gotten head coaches' jobs anywhere else in the league.
Yeah. So, real quickly, Jameis Winston, should he have been brought back to quarterback after this injury?
I didn't see any reason to tell you the truth. You know, you risk him getting hurt again or whatever. He was limping off the field towards the end. I don't know what the deal was.
Should they put him up in the closet and leave him there until?
I think they should just shut him down.
Okay.
You know.
Very good. Okay. Get over on the drums, Ed, because we got a good one. This is the top 10 oldest living singers. And this is a surprise to me a little bit. So, without further ado, these are the oldest living, you know, singers that we know.
Mm-hmm.
There's somebody, you know.
So they're still alive.
They were alive when I did this thing last night. Now, maybe a couple.
You never know.
Yeah, a couple might have dropped dead since then. Anyway, here we go. Number 10. Vic Damone. Do you ever hear of Vic Damone?
Not really.
Vic Damone was a big-time singer in the 40s and 50s. He's 89. He was born in 1928. All right, number 9. Burt Bacharach. Now, you've heard of Burt Bacharach.
Sure, yep.
He's 89 also.
Wow.
A little bit older than Vic. Number 8. Cleo Lane. Mm-mm. Come on, Ed. Have you ever heard of good old Cleo Lane?
Nope.
Well, I haven't either, but Cleo Lane is 90, and Cleo was born in 1927.
Hmm.
Good for Cleo. Number 7. And I just saw him in a movie on television yesterday. Harry Belafonte.
Mm.
You know him.
Yeah.
He's 90. Can you believe it?
Wow.
He was born in 1927. Number 8.
You're going the wrong
number
way.
Number 8. What am I talking about? 6. It's 6, yeah. But 6 looks like an 8. I got to put my glasses back on. Number 6. Stop confusing me, Ed. Tony Bennett.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know him?
Yep.
He left his heart and other body parts in San Francisco, did he not?
Yep.
Well, he's 91. And is he still singing?
I don't know. I've seen him in a couple of TV appearances.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay, number 5. Bobby Lewis. Have you ever heard of Bobby Lewis?
Not really.
Well, Bobby would be very upset if he hadn't. He's 92 years old now. He was born in 1925. Good old Bobby. All right, number 4. I've heard of this guy. He's a Frenchman. Charles Aznavour.
Nope.
He's 93 years old, and maybe it's all of that French wine, but he was born in 1924.
Hmm.
You don't seem impressed.
Nope. Never heard of him. Well, I'm impressed he's that old and still kicking.
You'll be impressed with the next one, I think.
All right.
Number 3. Doris Day.
Sure, I heard her.
Of course you've heard of her. Mm-hmm. She made movies.
Movies.
She's 95 years old.
Oh.
You know she's real big with animals and taking care of animals.
Right, yeah.
She's real, real big with that. And a wonderful woman.
Mm.
She was a big, in the 40s, she was a singer with a band, kind of like how Frank Sinatra started. Okay, number 2. And I have to confess, I don't know this guy, but we give him credit anyway. His name is Dave Bartholomew, 98 years old.
Uh-huh.
98. Actually, I might be wrong. He must be 99 because he was born. Well, he'll be 99 December 24th. There we go. Okay. Wow. Dave Bartholomew. All right. We got a little time here so we can do a nice drum roll, but this is the oldest living singer. I love it. And I don't think you've heard of her, but I have. And she actually appeared not only as a singer, but a really good dancer.
Hmm.
Vera Lynn. She's 100 years old.
Wow.
And she sang and she danced with people like Frank Sinatra and with Gene Kelly and with Fred Astaire. 100 years old. Wow.
Didn't Chubby Checker just die recently?
No, I don't think so.
No, who was the one from New Orleans?
Domino.
Fats Domino.
Fats would have been on this list. Did you know he would have been on the list?
Yeah.
He would have been about 4th.
Hmm.
Yeah. All right, my friends. Thank you so much. Remember, freedom works. As I walk along.